T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Joining me now to talk about free agency and to help break down the upcoming NHL draft for the Capitals is Capitals reporter for NBC Sports Washington, J.J. Regan. As always, you can find him on Twitter at J.J. Regan NBCS. J.J., welcome back to the show. It's so glad to hear from you. Hope your summer's going well so far.
So far, so good. Good to be on.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to start things off, free agency in the NHL doesn't officially open until June 30th, and already Washington has signed one of their four 2019 unrestricted free agents in Carl Hagelin to a four-year deal. The other UFAs this summer are Brooks Orpik, Devontae Smith-Pelly, and Brett Connolly. Do you see the Caps trying to ink either or all of these three remaining guys to new deals?
I think all three of those guys are going to be gone. I think if they could sign Brett Connolly, they would. But at the end of the day, this is a guy with over 20 goals in a pretty limited role for the Capitals. I think there are going to be teams out there that will offer him more money and a bigger role. And so ultimately, I think he will re-sign elsewhere. I just don't think they have the money under the cap to get a deal done with him. He would be the one that I would anticipate they would want to keep the most. Brooks Orpik, I think as soon as they made the trade for Radko Gudas, who is a guy who brings a lot of the same things, at least on the ice, he doesn't have the intangible benefits, the leadership qualities, but he does a lot of the same sort of things on the ice. I think that ship officially sailed about whether or not he would be back. And Devontae Smith-Pelly, at the end of the season, I think it was clear that that was over. After, you know, heading into the season, there were questions about his conditioning right away. And then he ended up going to the minors late in the season. So it wasn't a great season for him by any stretch. And it really should have been hit with all the momentum from the Stanley Cup win. He didn't take advantage of that. And really, he was just unproductive. And really, with depth scoring being a weakness for this team, I don't think you can commit a roster spot to a guy who you don't know if can be productive enough to even stay on your roster through the full season.
And, you know, other restricted free agents, obviously you have unrestricted free agents who can talk to any team, whereas restricted free agents, I guess, have to work within certain confines before they can seek contracts elsewhere. But you have the restricted free agents this summer in Andrei Burakovsky, Jacob Vrana, and Christian Juice. What's the likelihood of all three of them getting new contracts with Washington?
So the wild card here is Andrei Burakovsky. I think Jacob Vrana is absolutely going to resign. I think they love what he brought. I think he loves it in Washington. I don't think there's going to be any question there that he's going to be brought back. Christian Juice, he had a down year. I think he was a big part of the championship run. So they're definitely going to bring him back, and especially because I think they could do that for relatively low cost. The wild card, as I said, is Andrei Burakovsky. The problem is to qualify him and to retain his rights as a restricted free agent, you'd have to qualify him by offering him a one-year deal for $3.25 million. This is a guy who has had inconsistencies throughout his career and injury problems throughout his career, and who's scored 12 goals in each of the last three seasons. $3.25 million is too much for a player like that. So what do? Can you try to get him to sign for a lower cap hit? I think that might be, I don't know this, but I think they might have a chance. This is the only team that he's ever known. And a guy who's dealing with confidence issues at times, I think it would help him to stay in the same place. But then again, maybe a change of scenery is exactly what this guy needs. Maybe the team has decided to move on from him because he's too inconsistent. Yeah, he's a guy who can be an asset as a bottom six player, but he was someone who was a first round draft pick for Washington. So I think the bar is set higher for him here, and he just is not living up to those expectations. If the team can lower that bar and look at him as a bottom six forward and he can exceed those expectations, great. But otherwise, I think it may be best for him to have a change of scenery. It may be best for the team to not hope that he's going to have that breakthrough season that we've been waiting for years that never seems to happen. So I think potentially we could see him, his rights get traded prior to free agency to see if maybe they won't get much for it, but you know, to try to salvage something if they do in fact intend to move on from him.
I hear you. It sounds like an interesting situation for sure. And you mentioned a change of scenery and also the acquisition of Radko Gudas, obviously traded from Philadelphia, and Matt Niskanen sent up Interstate 95 to the Flyers in exchange. We know that Gudas has a reputation for being physical and drawing penalty minutes. He also absolutely compliments Tom Wilson in that regard. But in your opinion, what kind of upside does Gudas bring to Washington?
Yeah, so this was an interesting trade because I, like most people, as soon as I saw it, I thought, wow, so the Caps got worse in this trade. And the more you look at it, that's actually not the case. Radko Gudas got voted as the team's best defenseman by the media in Philadelphia for last season. He had a good year. This is a player with some upside. I know he comes with a lot of baggage. He comes with a reputation, and it's well-deserved. Yeah, he's going to be compared to Tom Wilson. I don't think they're comparable. I think Tom Wilson sometimes gets in trouble for being overzealous with his hits. But if you watch the situations Radko Gudas got suspended for, those were intentional. It looks like he's intentionally trying to do harm. So yeah, I think his reputation as a dirty player is earned. But at the same time, he has tried to clean up his game. His penalty minutes have decreased in each of the last three seasons. He had only 63 last year, which would rank second in the Caps. It's not good, but it's better than the over 100 he had four seasons ago and is about half of what Tom Wilson had last season. This is a guy who has some upgrade. Analytically speaking, he would actually be an upgrade from Matt Niskanen. I'm not sure I would actually buy that considering all the intangibles that come with Matt Niskanen as a leader, as a steady player, as someone who you don't have to worry about taking liberties and end up getting a massive suspension. Because that's where we are with Radko Gudas right now. He's in the Tom Wilson category of the next one's going to be a big one. So the next hit, you know, you're one hit away from losing him for 20 games, which is not ideal. But if he stays clean and keeps his nose clean, I think he can be a very good third pair defenseman. He's a right shot. Both Jonas Siegenthaler and Christian Jews are left shots. So I think he's a good fit for that third pair. He's a physical guy, obviously, has a physical presence, but he's a better puck mover than I think a lot of people realize. He's very good at getting the puck off his stick and out of the zone on first pass. So this is a guy with more upside than I think a lot of people realize, and he could end up making this defense a little bit better than it was last year.
It'll definitely be interesting to see how it all plans out for sure. You know, I remember Radko Gudas from his development in the Tampa system. I actually remember him as a member of the Norfolk Admirals. I think he was on that Admirals team that set that North American professional record for, I think they won like 20 some games in a row. And so it's just interesting to see him, you know, become this sort of player. And it does come full circle, you know, at least for me to see him now as a member of the Capitals, a team that, you know, I cover professionally, but I also definitely root for myself. But moving on from that, you know, we look at free agency. You know, we've got a couple of guys, Braden Holtby and Nick Backstrom, are coming up in contract years. And it seems like a lot of what the Capitals are trying to do are maybe trying to set themselves up for next summer in a way if they feel like Nick Backstrom and Braden Holtby are deserving of you know, contract extensions or new deals. Do you sort of feel that way, in that this is kind of what it's building up to, is that next summer when you've got two marquee players in Backstrom and Holtby getting ready to hit the free agent market?
Yeah, somewhat. The Gudas deal, Matt Niskanen had 2 years left on his contract. Gudas has only one. So by next year, all that money is now gone off their cap, which should help them sign at least one of them. I think the way they're looking at it, this is just my opinion, but I think if they could get a deal with Nicklas Backstrom done, they would do it right away. Now, since these guys have 1 year left on their deal, they can't technically negotiate with them until July 1st. But I think if they could get Backstrom done this summer, they would. Holtby, I don't think so. And the reason why, there's a few reasons why. Sergei Bobrovsky is going to probably break the bank and get a massive deal. Sergei Bobrovsky is the same age now as Holtby will be next year when Holtby hits free agency. Their numbers in the regular season are identical. These two have been some of the best goalies in the league. The difference is that when you get to the playoffs, Holtby is lights out compared to Bobrovsky, and he has a cup. So by all accounts, Holtby should be worth more than Bobrovsky, and Bobrovsky could get $10 million-plus on his next deal. I don't think the Caps can afford that. Plus, their top prospect in their system is Ilya Samsonov, who's a goalie. So I think there's a lot riding on this year, especially with the Seattle expansion draft looming, when teams are only allowed to protect one goalie. I don't think it makes sense to re-sign Holtby if you think Samsonov can be your starter, because all of a sudden you're committing a heck of a lot of money to Holtby. Plus, if I'm Holtby, I'm asking for a no-movement clause, because I see Seattle, and I'm not signing anywhere long-term just to get moved and picked by Seattle. Well, the Caps can't do that if they want Samsonov to be their starter, because, like I said, you can only protect one goalie. So I think everything is in a holding pattern with Holtby to see how both he and Samsonov perform this year, to see if Samsonov may be ready to take over the reins next year when Holtby's deal expires. And I know fans may hate to hear that, but it's just part of the business. I don't think the Caps can afford, or they certainly would like to not have to pay a goalie who's over 30, or who will be by that point, $10-plus million, when you've got the future starter waiting in the wings in Hershey.
Interesting. Interesting for sure. And like you said, it will just come down to performance and how that all pans out, especially for a guy like Holtby. And you do mention Seattle, who will be gearing up to put a team together here in the not-too-distant future. So looking ahead to free agency this summer, in terms of the Caps, what kind of needs do they have, and what are they going to look to address in terms of personnel if in fact, you know, they don't bring guys like Brooks Orpik, DSP, and maybe Brett Connolly back?
So the big thing for them, and pretty much the only thing, is going to be depth scoring. They're going to need some bottom six forwards. They're set in the top six. The top six is all coming back. Assuming they re-sign Christian Juice, they're going to have seven defensemen, so their blue line is set. The only thing they need is bottom six. In the seven games that they played in the playoffs, their bottom six accounted for only 5 goals. That's not enough, especially when you consider that one of those goals was a penalty shot, and one of those goals was an empty netter. That's not enough. And now throw in the fact that 2 of those goals came from Brett Connolly, who's about to walk out the door. They desperately need some guys who can produce on those bottom two lines. So usually when it comes to restricted free agents, most of these guys it's assumed that they're going to re-sign. With the salary cap and their salary cap situation being what it is, I don't know if it's a slam dunk if they bring back a guy like Chandler Stephenson or Dmitry Yashkin, considering the offensive upside might not necessarily be there for those two. It's really hard to figure out what they might do, considering that the salary cap hasn't been set yet and may not be set until Saturday. And even so, it was projected to be $83 million. And now there are a lot of reports out there that it could be in the $81.5 to $82 million. And for a team like the Caps, who are going to be right up against the salary cap, that's not an insignificant difference. That's huge for them and huge for their plans. You know, not knowing what the cap is, it's hard to tell. I think if it goes to 82, 83, I think they may have room for one semi-significant contributor, maybe a $3 to $4 million guy. I keep seeing reports that they're all in on Marcus Johansson. I don't see how they can do that unless they move money. He performed very well at the biggest stage in the Stanley Cup final. I don't see how his price tag is not beyond what they can afford at this point, but he's the sort of guy that they need. They need a guy who can sit on the third line and produce in limited minutes. That's what they need. And they also need to upgrade their fourth line. Your fourth line just can't be your checking line anymore. It has to contribute with some goals as well. So maybe a guy like Brian Boyle would be a good fit there. But just maybe Noel Achari, who played very well for Boston throughout the playoffs. So those would be the big needs. They definitely need depth scoring. They need a upper scale top, a bottom six forward to stick on their third line if Brett Connolly leaves. And they need to upgrade their fourth line. So the free agency should be offense heavy for the Caps.
Looking ahead to the draft in Vancouver this weekend, the Caps own the number 25 spot in the draft order. If the Caps decide to stay at 25, and I'll follow up on that in a second, who is likely to be the 2019 first-round pick of the Caps?
Well, it's always hard to project the NHL draft, especially because most of these players you're not going to see for several years. So I'll try to narrow it down a little bit. I think they'd be crazy not to go offense at this point. They haven't picked an offensive player in the first round since Jacob Vrana. So I think they're going to be looking for a forward. From there, they like speed. They are very attuned to the direction that the NHL is going. They do value size, but I think they like a guy who can skate well and who's very smart. I think they will trade size for a good hockey IQ and speed. So, you know, you always got to look at the WHL. They really like the pipeline from the WHL. You always have to look to Europe. They are one team who is never afraid to draft out of Europe. So if you're trying to narrow it down, that's what I would say. Look for a forward, either someone from the WHL or Canada, someone who has good speed, good hands, and a good hockey IQ.
And like you said, I did see that, you know, they are potentially in the market to trade up in the draft order. If so, where do you sort of see them trying to slide in?
So this is really interesting because it makes sense for them to want to try to trade up because they have the 25th pick and because they are so barren for high-end offensive talent. It would make total sense to me for them to try to trade up. On the other hand, there are a lot of reports coming out that they're in go-for-it mode. They are in win-now mode. And if you are in that, then maybe they try to actually trade down. Maybe they dangle that first-round draft pick as trade bait to a team looking to move up. So it's weird to say that I think they're more likely to trade up when they're in win-now mode. But I think this year it's sort of caught up to them that they don't have offensive prospects or high-end ones because this is the year where they don't have much money, where they need guys to fill in the bottom six, and they don't have those options, that it's really coming back to bite them. So I would not be surprised, even though they're in win-now mode, even though they're trying to go for it, I would not be surprised if they look to trade up because this could actually be a benefit for them in two ways. If you're trying to shed salary, you could offer them your pick plus maybe one of those players that you're not sure on, maybe the rights to Andre Burakovsky, something like that, to try to entice a team. I don't think they have enough trade assets where they could get up into the top 10, but I do think that maybe you'd be looking at the top 15 potentially. So I think the most likely scenario is they either trade up to about the top 15 or trade down out of the first round completely.
And then, you know, it's a long weekend. Obviously, there are multiple rounds. there's a lot of emphasis on sort of the first round, at least, and you know, especially the first three guys to go. You have guys like Jack Hughes, who are going to be the number one overall pick, who seem to be NHL ready, whereas that's not necessarily the case for teams like the Caps, who draft guys you know, in the later stages of the first round and beyond. And just to kind of segue from that, The Caps made seven picks in 2018, and it looked like all seven of those picks either remained in junior hockey or, in the case of Martin Fervieri, if I'm saying that name right, stayed with their professional team in Europe. And so I was just wondering, could you kind of fill in listeners on sort of how that works, especially in hockey, where it's not like in other sports where if you get drafted, it's sort of a use it or lose it situation, whereas in hockey you kind of have guys that they get drafted, they may sign a contract, and then they will go back to playing either junior hockey or they'll stay in Europe and play professionally versus trying to take up a spot on a minor league roster.
Sure. So the vast majority of players who get drafted in the draft, even the vast majority of the first round draft picks, will not play in the NHL next year. Very few of them actually will. It's not rare at all, and that happens a lot. A lot of them are in junior hockey and their junior leagues. A lot of them will stay there. Even if they are very good in their junior teams, there is an agreement between most of those junior leagues and the NHL and the AHL saying that those players can only go to the NHL, but they cannot go to the AHL until they are out of junior hockey. So even if you like a prospect and think he is above playing junior hockey, unless he's ready for the NHL, he's going to stay there until his time with the juniors is up. A lot of these players, you mentioned Martin Fervieri. He signed a contract with the Capitals, but he stayed in Europe. There are provisions in these contracts that say, I believe it is a 10-game cutoff. You have to play 10 games for the first year of that contract to be burned. So even though he's under contract, he did not burn a year of that contract by staying in Europe. And the way that's set up is just because these players, it takes so long for them to develop that they don't want to have to sign a player for 6 years or risk losing him before after his first contract is up. There are some time limits for these things. The big one is 4 years. I think most people know about these from the college players. So there are provisions for college players where if you play 4 years of college hockey, then you once August 15th hits, you are officially a free agent and can sign with any team. So that is the only real time limit that these guys have, is that four-year window to get these guys under contract. And that's why you see a lot of NHL teams push to sign players as soon as their season ends in college, because they don't want them to reach that senior year and end up losing that player come August 15th. That very thing is about to happen to the Capitals. Chase Prisky was a highly regarded defenseman for them, who just finished his senior year at Quinnipiac, and he informed the team this spring that he would not be signing with them, and he would elect to wait to August 15th to become a free agent. So in terms of time limit, in most cases, you don't really have to worry about that in hockey. It's understood that most of these guys are going to take several years to develop, and it's very unique in that sense. It's more like baseball than it is the NFL or basketball. In that sense. And that's why for 99% of the time, you draft for need you draft for best available player, because if these guys are going to take several years to develop and you need a forward right now, it doesn't make sense to skip on what could potentially be a superstar defenseman or a superstar goalie just because you need a forward, because you may not see that forward in several years. And I think you see teams make that mistake where they get so focused on a position that they let superstars walk. And I know it's funny to say, after I just said the Capitals must get a forward, but I think that's part of the reason why they may trade up, is because they see the higher end forwards starting to go early on in the draft. And that's what could drive them to make a trade and trade up to get one of those high end forwards.
I really appreciate you explaining that, because I've always wondered that, is, you know, you see these guys get drafted, especially in the first round and everything, and you go, wait a minute, I'm looking at these ECHL rosters, or, you know, I'm looking at the South Carolina Stingrays roster, and these guys are nowhere to be found. What's the deal? So it's interesting to get that sort of, you know, that backstory behind it. So I appreciate that for sure. And so I've got two more for you, and then I'll let you go. The first is that it was announced that the 2020 NHL draft will be held in Montreal. And over the last 20 years or so, it's been rotating between different NHL cities. Washington has never hosted an NHL draft or an All-Star game. So do you know if the Caps front office has any plans to bid for either event? And do you feel like DC would be a great setting for an NHL draft weekend?
I have not heard of any plans to host either. I don't know that there would be much benefit to something like the draft, where that's really, really, you have to be a really big hockey fan to be sort of into that. I don't think it's ultimately all that fan-friendly for people to show up, wait for hours, so that your team can draft a bunch of players you never heard of and who you won't see for many years. I've wondered why there has been more momentum for the Capitals to get an All-Star game. I think when you have guys, when you win the Cup in 2018 and you have superstar players, and Washington is starting to bubble up into a good hockey market, I don't know why they wouldn't try to take advantage of that, especially for a team they put in three outdoor games the last few years. So you see, it would seem to make sense to try to do that, especially when every year there's a question when Alex Ovechkin inevitably gets picked whether or not he's going to play. You've seen him skip a few years now and again. If you have it here, at least you guarantee that he'll be here. So I have not heard any specific plans. I don't know if the draft would make a whole lot of sense for this area, but I do think that an All-Star game would be a great event for Washington, D.C. I think it would make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, and I mean, and you sort of mentioned on it, and you know, Monumental Sports and Entertainment is pouring all this money into Capital One Arena improvements, and you know, they're doing all this work, and you'll see new scoreboards and LED lighting and stuff all around the arena. You would think that they would want to sort of put this stuff on display for, you know, an international audience. But I guess obviously the brains behind all that stuff seem to maybe know a little more about it than us. But it is interesting to speculate on for sure. But one last thing before I let you go, and this is a draft question. Can you tell me or think back to maybe what are the top two or three most memorable important draft picks or trades in your opinion in Capitals history?
Oh boy. Well, I mean, the first obviously would be Alex Ovechkin, a guy who was so coveted that actually this is one of my favorite draft stories. The Florida Panthers, Alex Ovechkin fell 2 days after the cutoff date for eligible draft picks. So right after the eligible year when Florida had the number one overall pick. They wanted him so bad, they petitioned the NHL that they should count leap years, that if you counted the leap years, technically Ovechkin would fall into their window where they would be allowed to draft him.
Interesting.
So they desperately wanted to draft him. They made that argument. I think they actually did try to draft him anyway until the NHL just told them to stop, that it wasn't going to happen. So obviously, you know, that day, getting the ping pong balls to fall your way and get the number one overall pick on a year, you know, sometimes there aren't those generational talents available in the draft. Sometimes you don't get those players. We saw Edmonton, they got four number one picks recently, and only one of them turned into a generational talent. So Alex Ovechkin would definitely be the most memorable. There's also the year when they picked Nicholas Backstrom. They had Ovechkin announce the pick. And they were actually Boston tried to trade for that pick. And the Capitals were willing to listen to them. But George Mifee, who was the general manager at the time, asked, "Who are you guys going to take?" And they said the Swede. And McPhee knew that they were trying to trade up to get Backstrom. And so he said no. And then went with the pick. Pick Backstrom, and it speaks for itself. So those are the good. The bad, obviously, Philip Forsberg. You get this high-end offensive talent. They got him, I believe, 12th overall, and less than a year later, they end up trading him away to the Nashville Predators for Martin Erat and Michael Latta. So he never ended up putting on a Caps jersey and playing at the NHL level. You got to wonder what happened in that year to make them sour so much on that one player. But luckily for them, they had Tom Wilson, I think, four picks later. They had two first-round draft picks that year. So that draft was not a total bust. They ended up with Tom Wilson, who is finally turning into a top-line player after a few years of questioning. But so definitely some good times and some bad times at the draft for sure.
Awesome. Well, that is J.J. Regan again for NBC Sports Washington. You appear on the Capitals Talk podcast as well over at NBC Sports Washington. I think I've seen you tweet about that a few times, right?
Yep. I am on the podcast a few times, and I'm on the air every once in a while. We're doing a big draft show for the draft on Friday, and I'll be on the air for the whole 2.5 hours or so that we'll be broadcasting.
Well, that's awesome. I'm looking forward to checking that out. And as always, I appreciate your time. Again, you can catch JJ on Twitter at JJRegan NBCS. And JJ, thank you so much again for your time. Thanks for appearing on this show throughout the season. I'm looking forward to bringing this back in the fall. Obviously, with the summer, you know, things are not as in full swing as they are. So I think I'm going to take a brief hiatus at least until the fall, and hopefully once the season gets rearing back up again, I'm going to hopefully make it up to DC for a couple of games. So I'll definitely look forward to catching up with you in the press room and the press box and everything else.
Sure, sounds good. Thanks for having me on.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.